Big program for you today on the podcast. We have Julie Kelly talking a little bit about some new evidence from January 6th that kind of helps the story for the left unravel just a bit. Also, Alan Dershowitz joins me. What happened yesterday with the judge and Hunter Biden? It's good. He said that it was good for the Constitution and a good thing. I said, maybe, I mean, I think there's a chance that maybe, and he said, don't get too excited. We also talked to Greg Stube, the congressman from Florida, who is talking about impeachment in the House. And we told you some rather disturbing things that are happening around the country, that people are being silenced, including Jordan Peterson, in a truly 1984 sort of way. All that on today's podcast, brought to you by Sweatblock. Sweatblock is this amazing deodorant antiperspirant. It comes in the regular stick that you can use, but if you are really sweaty or you're living in a place like Texas, the fires of hell right now, and you walk outside and you're instantly sweating, Sweatblock wipes are really for you. Sweatblock wipes, you just apply them every few days. For me, it lasts about a week. You wipe one before you go to bed under each arm, and you get up in the morning, you take a shower, you go to work, and you don't have to reapply anything for a few days. And it is really, really good. Sweatblock. Try it now. Sweatblock.com. Use the promo code Beck, sweatblock.com/Beck, promo code Beck. You'll save 20%. You can also get Sweatblock at Amazon.com.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Alan Dershowitz is joining us now, Harvard Law School professor emeritus and the host of The Dersh Show, and don't forget, the author of Get Trump. Alan Dershowitz, how are you, sir?
I am doing great. The judge did the right thing yesterday, and guess who predicted it? I predicted over and over again that she would not accept this plea bargain. Of course, CNN said, of course she has to accept the plea bargain. What are you talking about? It's Dershowitz again. He's saying all kinds of things. Well, you know, CNN always gets it wrong because their predictions are based always on wishful thinking. They wanted the judge to accept the plea deal, so they said she would. I'm not any smarter than the people on CNN. I just don't allow my preferences to influence my predictions. My predictions are based on my 60 years of experience with the law, and I saw deep flaws in this plea bargain, and I said it over and over again, she wouldn't and she shouldn't accept this plea bargain, and she didn't.
How brave of that was this, Alan?
Pretty brave. You know, she gets flack because she was a so-called Trump appointee, but she wasn't a Trump appointee. As you know, the way judges get appointed, when you have two senators in the state from a different party, the senators basically make the decision. Now, the president can veto it, but she was essentially appointed by the two Democratic senators and Trump alike. So, you know, she's a young and courageous a woman. Both sides wanted this deal to go through. The Justice Department wanted their kind of secret deal. We never saw the plea bargain. We never saw what was entailed. I just smelled a rat, but we didn't see it. And she said, no, wait a minute. Does this plea bargain mean he can't ever be investigated again for other crimes? You know, and we don't know whether the investigation was limited to Delaware, the smallest state in the union, or whether Weiss, David Weiss, was allowed to go to the District of Columbia, allowed to go to Los Angeles, to Ukraine, to China, to follow the money. And if he wasn't, the plea bargain should never be accepted.
So she kind of delayed it. She said, until you two clear this up, I'm not going to hear it. But one of the problems I thought she had was there was no adversarial feeling between the two parties. You know, for our system to work, it has to be adversarial. Doesn't mean it needs to be nasty, but adversarial. One side is pushing for the law. The other one is pushing for the client. And they didn't have this. They got into this deal together.
And they should have had a third party, whether it in the form of an amicus brief, a friend of the court brief. Somebody should have said, we're there on behalf of the American people. Justice must not only be done, it must seem to be done. You know, the Bible in the book of Deuteronomy instructs judges and says two things to them. Number one, don't take bribes. That's obvious. But that's the second. Mm-hmm. The first one is lo takir panim. That's the Hebrew for don't recognize faces. Don't do justice
yes.
based on who the person is. That's the origin
Thank
of the
you.
Famous statue of justice with the blindfold. It's not Greek literature. It's the Bible that says be blindfolded. Don't look at race. Don't look at class. Don't look at gender. Don't look at politics. Don't even look at the person. Don't peek under the blindfold. Do justice based only on the law and the facts. It has to be the same justice administered to everybody. And that's a biblical command going back how many thousands of years? And the judge finally did that. Now,
we are so lost. This actually gave a lot of people a lot of hope because unlike CNN, I just assumed from the way things are always going now that it was going to go through. And it didn't. And that gave me a hope that, wait, there is yeah. some independence here. There are some people that understand the rule of law and gave me a great deal of hope. What does it mean going forward?
Well, I would say it gave me a little bit of hope. I think you have too much hope. I think she will ultimately
okay.
accept the deal. She will eventually accept the deal with a few modifications. What they'll agree to is, no, he can't be prosecuted for any other crimes unless the evidence was not available now or he tried to suppress it or the crimes are very serious. But there'll be an agreement, and I think she'll accept the agreement. I don't think she should, but I think she will. She should call Garland. She should call Weiss, put them under oath and say, look, Garland, you say he had the authority to investigate anywhere in the country, including District of Columbia and Los Angeles. He says, no, he was restricted to Delaware. Who is right? I have to know that before I accept the deal. That's what she should do. I suspect she won't do that.
Why?
I think she feels she's done what she has to do. She doesn't have a roving commission to do justice. She has to deal with what are called cases and controversies. And generally, judges just resolve disputes between the parties. But here, as you said, there are no disputes between the parties. The parties both agree
Correct.
That there should be a plea bargain of this kind, which, if it involves only these two crimes, is not a sweetheart deal. If you only were late in your taxes and didn't fill out a form properly for guns, yeah, that's the right sentence. But if they didn't investigate Burisma, if they didn't investigate
right.
what's going on in China, then it's not an appropriate plea bargain, and then it really is a sweetheart deal.
So can I ask you, and I'm not asking you for a legal thing, always innocent until proven guilty, I get. But right. I'm not saying that the president is guilty. I'm saying right. it looks really bad for the president. If I were just going on these facts, it has to be investigated properly, Absolutely. Not some witch hunt. But this the evidence that is out is a little overwhelming. It's much more than I think we had on Nixon. It's a little overwhelming, and it's beyond Nixon to me. Nixon was a break-in. It was the cover-up that was the real problem. Here we not only have a extensive cover-up, but we might also have taking money from foreign adversaries. This is really bad.
It
Am
is,
I reading this wrong?
Say, no, you're reading the evidence that's been offered correctly. What
Correct.
We don't know is whether it's true. You know, whistleblowers, just because they're whistleblowers, doesn't mean they're telling the
I know.
Truth. And so the issue
I know.
Was Joe Biden sitting next to Hunter Biden when he made that threatening, extortionate demand? We have to find that out. Was he on the phone
yeah.
10 times? Are there recordings? I mean, if I'm the prosecution,
but,
I don't tell the other side whether there are any recordings. Let them testify under oath without knowing whether there are recordings. That's the best way of getting the truth. If you don't know whether there's a recording, you're going to tell the truth. If you know there's no recording, well, you know, you can remember things in an innocent way. You can't do that.
Correct.
If you believe there's a recording. And I don't know whether there's a recording. And I don't know whether or not they think there's a recording on the Biden side.
But
so there's a lot of investigation that has to be done.
Would you agree that we are at least, I mean, the New York Times and CNN and everybody else still saying there's nothing here. Why are we even talking about this? Maybe you're right. I was like this with Donald Trump. I was willing to investigate. I want to know what happened. I want a real investigation. There, you would agree that the New York Times and all those guys are wrong by saying there's nothing here.
Yeah, except there's nothing new about that. The New York Times and CNN on these issues have been wrong from the very beginning. Look, if there's one word to generalize about most Americans, Republicans, Democrats, liberals, conservatives, Christians, Jews, Muslims, it's skepticism. Prove it. Show me. I'm not sure. That's the American way. We don't accept things because somebody said it, whether it's because the President of the United States said it or a whistleblower said it. Show me the facts. What we need is special counsel appointed, and it has to be appointed with the coordination of Republicans and Democrats alike. It has to be somebody who is above reproach, perhaps a former Supreme Court justice, a former president of a university, somebody who can really look into this, who doesn't care, has no horse in the race, doesn't have an interest in a particular outcome. And that's what we haven't had up to now.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program. More on the impeachment of Joe Biden and what happened yesterday with his son Hunter from Representative Greg Stube from Florida. We do that coming up in just a second. Stand by. First, I want to take you back to January 6th and the police officer that was brutally beaten. In fact, here are a couple of interviews with him right after January 6th.
I got hurt. I would do it again if I have to. It's my job.
It was very scary
because I thought I was going to lose my life. When I came in, she wanted to hug me. And I told her no. Because I was covered. I was covered in pepper spray. My hands were bleeding still. And I couldn't even sleep because I went, took a shower, and instead of helping, that re-inflamed the chemicals.
It had soaked through your clothes?
Yes. Took a bath with milk. That ain't help.
Wow. Here's another cut.
I too was being crushed by the rioters. I could feel myself losing oxygen and recall thinking to myself, this is how I'm going to die, defending this entrance.
Stop. That is pretty hard to hear. Pretty hard to hear. Now, Julie Kelly is a journalist, and she's been given analysis and commentary related to the weaponization of the U.S. Department of Justice. She writes on the Substack, Declassified with Julie Kelly. She also is giving us some really unique looks at January 6th and the pending criminal indictments of Donald Trump. And Julie has just tweeted out earlier this week that that story doesn't seem to fit. Do I have that right, Julie?
You do have that right, Glenn, and thank you so much for having me on and sharing my work.
Sure.
So Officer Aquilino Gunnell, who you heard there, his sob story, has been one of what I call January 6th celebrity cop. So he was one of four police officers, security guards, who testified during the very first January 6th Select Committee televised hearing. The idea of that hearing was to make it sound like Trump supporters tried to kill police officers that day. And Gunnell has been now for 2.5 years telling his sob story, his near-death experience, that he almost died, injuries to his head, his hands, his shoulder, that his foot was crushed. Well, footage that was obtained by Joe Hanneman at Epoch Times, I have to credit him, when I was looking at his coverage of what happened, actually happened to Roseanne Boylan, the first person who popped up, in my view, was Officer Ganell. And so I zoomed in. It's like, well, I can't believe this is him. And there he is for 7 minutes, as I have in my piece and on Twitter, walking around, no indication of any injury, no sign of pain. He's actually kicking things aside with his feet. His hands are visible. There's no bleeding. There's no abrasions on his hands. His shoulders, both shoulders are mobile. He's taking off gear. He's bending up and down. He's moving things around. He's putting on his a surgical face mask. No apparent signs of pain or injury for 7 minutes. But yet here he has been a key figure in promoting the idea that police were almost killed on January 6th and that he was so grievously injured, Glenn, that he had to take a medical leave for at least a year and then only went back to partial duty due to his injuries and surgery he claimed that he had because of those injuries.
What else do you know about him, Julie?
I don't know much. I know he is a veteran. I know he's an immigrant, I believe, from maybe the Dominican Republic. That's really all that I know. But, Glenn, I also want to underscore his words and his claims are not without consequence. He has been a government witness in trials of January 6th defendants, where he has taken the stand under oath and talked about his injuries that he suffered. He has filed victim impact statements and sentencing hearings for January 6th defendants, talking about these serious injuries that were inflicted by Trump supporters. And he specifically says Trump supporters. He does not say protesters, rioters, Trump supporters. This has helped judges in impose very long, harsh sentences against January 6th defendants. And in fact, Glenn, one federal judge, Trevor McFadden, specifically called out Officer Ganell in his testimony in one trial and said that his testimony about his injuries were not credible and that he did not believe when Officer Ganell said he had been beaten with a stolen baton. So it's not just that he's talking on, you know, CNN, Jake Tapper, or he's posting this garbage on Twitter. He has said these things under oath, as I said, with dire consequences for defendants.
Do you know, because I know you've been following all of the cases, and I would assume you know some of the attorneys just by following it, are they looking into retrying their cases? I mean, this is information that the government had and didn't release. That seems like a miscarriage of justice.
So well said, Glenn. And this has been a criticism of defendants now for more than 2 years, that this Department of Justice and Capitol Police, by the way, have designated all of this footage as highly sensitive government material. All of it has been under strict protective orders in court. And the government is really only turning over footage to defendants that is case specific. So say in the case of Pat McCoy, where Ganell testified, they only saw footage of the defendant. The security video of that particular defendant. They didn't turn over or produce the video of Officer Ganell, and this is only one clip that we've seen. I'm sure there's other footage of him walking through the Capitol. And keep in mind, this is around 5 o'clock that day. This isn't before the violence between protesters and police began. This is after it ended. So it's not like he went back to another area of the Capitol and got beaten up by protesters. The building had been evacuated. The grounds were being evacuated. So, yes, I believe that the two defendants where Officer Ganell testified and filed victim impact statements, they are on appeal. So I'm sure that this footage will be part of their appeal as to what the government was hiding, not just from the public, but from defendants and their attorneys.
Right. So the you're following greatly the weaponization of the government hearings that are going on. Do you believe that those move forward into anything of significance?
I'm not sure, Glenn. I was really hoping that there would be a separate January 6th committee. And we really need one for two reasons: to expose all of the lies and falsehoods that were promoted by the first select committee, and also to tell the American people the truth, to show them this video. I mean, I post this on Twitter and Truth Social, and I post it obviously in my work, and thanks to interviews like this, it's reaching a broader audience. But they need televised hearings. They need to fight back with what the January 6th Select Committee, because this is the crux of the weaponization of the Department of Justice and this administration. This January 6th is ground zero for turning the war on terror that once was against ISIS and Al-Qaeda against conservatives, Republicans, Trump supporters. So you can't talk about weaponizing government without fully exposing the truth about January 6th. What the Department of Justice is doing, concealing evidence, the lies that the Congress has told to the American people, and how the FBI is using its counterterrorism unit to continue, even this week, Glenn, 2.5 years later, arrest people related to even minimal participation in the events of January 6th.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So, Julie, I think you could make a case that this is even more important than the Hunter and Joe Biden selling their country out for, well, their fellow countrymen. I think they got 30 cents ahead for us. Can you compare the two?
I guess, but I would argue that this is more important because everyone sort of knows nothing is really going to happen to Hunter Biden. I think it's extremely useful what James Comer and the Oversight Committee and, of course, the Ways and Means Committee and these courageous whistleblowers from the IRS and FBI are talking about with these investigations. But January 6th is it's going to be a key issue in the 2024 presidential race, but it is still the Department of Justice is still collecting victims. They're still collecting scalps. Yeah. And so there's no... It is far, in my view, of course, far more important. The American people need to know what is happening, not just Department of Justice, but in this courthouse, which is where Donald Trump's lawyers are today, as Jack Smith is now preparing a multi-count felony criminal indictment against Donald Trump for January 6th and could rope in attorneys, White House officials, and maybe even a few Republican members of the House.
This is crazy. Thank you so much for everything that you do. I appreciate that you have just zeroed in on this and not let it go. Julie, thank you.
Thanks for having me on, Glenn.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Pat Gray is with us. And we were just talking as we were getting ready for Greg Stubbe. I think, Pat, that there is hope that this is not going to end well for the Bidens.
I'd like to be able to think that. I hope that's true. It's just hard to believe, you know? It's hard to believe. Because
no, I know.
They've gotten away with this stuff for so long, it's like, okay, they're bulletproof. There's a different set of standards for them than us.
Listen to CNN. Last night, here is the in front of the courthouse. Here's what they were saying.
So the judge said that she could not accept the plea agreement as it was structured. Remember, there was a plea agreement where Hunter Biden would plead guilty to two tax misdemeanors and then a diversion on a felony gun charge. Well, the judge taking issue with both of them, saying that on the plea agreement related to the tax charges, she was saying that this agreement as structured just had her as what she said, a rubber stamp. It did not allow her to weigh in on whether she thought that the plea was acceptable. She had questions about that and wants both sides to brief her on that. Also on the gun diversion, she had questions about how that deal was structured because it inserted her in the process. If Hunter Biden breached the terms of this agreement and the government had an issue with it, they wanted the judge to act as a neutral arbiter.
Okay, so she goes on and on with this, and there's so much more than that. The judge said, it looks like you two are cozy, and I've never seen a plea deal like this, and this washes him clean of everything. Is that your understanding? The Biden administration, or the Biden lawyers said, Yeah, that's our understanding. And Department of Defense or Department of Justice said, no, no, I don't think so. So is anything going to happen? We have Representative Greg Stube on with us now. He is a congressman from Florida, and he is one of the two that are really pushing to get the House to move to impeach Joe Biden. Hi, Greg. How are you?
Hey, good. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
You bet. So what is the mood in Congress for these hearings and impeachment?
Well, you started to see the speaker actually talk about this, which I think is a great move forward, because a lot of us have been clamoring for impeachment for quite some time. But through these different investigations, all of this evidence now that is mounting, evidence after evidence that Joe Biden was involved in the business deals with Hunter Biden, was receiving financial information. Oversight Committee did subpoenas on the financial information. We're waiting on some of that. But through some of that, we've been able to ascertain that it's like $20 or $30 million that the Biden family has received through four actions that obviously at the time vice president, but some of these actions he's done while he's been president. Senator Grassley just released a form from the FBI that showed the $5 million payment related to the Ukraine and Burisma issue. I think there's overwhelming evidence, having been a lawyer myself and been a prosecutor in the JAG Corps. So we're actually drafting our own impeachment resolution specifically on bribery crimes, corruption crimes, because in my opinion, there's overwhelming evidence of that now in the public sphere. And we're still doing these investigations, so there'll probably be more to follow.
So, Greg, I'm with you. I think there is overwhelming evidence. The Nixon trials went, you know, through the first term into the second. All of the accusations happened in the first term. He was reelected. Nobody wanted to talk about impeachment. The Democrats brought the impeachment back up. And it was eventually the turning of some of those Democrats in the Senate that were finally convinced, yeah, he did do this. Do you sense any kind of even softening of the other side on, yeah, I'm not going to say this out loud, but that looks bad?
I don't, you know, you obviously don't see Democrats going on the news and saying that they think that the president should be impeached. But what you're seeing is, and this is kind of shocking to me, frankly, is the mainstream media is actually, for the first time, actually starting to report about these things. They're starting to report about the Hunter Biden issues because it's such a pervasive issue now, and it is so evidentiary apparent that this was going on that they don't have a choice but to report about it. So that's actually putting Democrats in very difficult positions. You've seen the plea deal with Hunter Biden now fall apart, and that isn't about Hunter Biden. That's about the information that can come from all of that if that goes to trial through discovery, of how Joe Biden's involved in that. You've heard the IRS whistleblowers testify directly, and these are the gentlemen who were part of the team that was investigating Hunter Biden and their foreign business dealings and all these tax issues, that specifically said they had evidence that the big guy and Joe Biden was involved and wanted to issue subpoenas and warrants on information, and the DOJ shut them down. So as this starts to open up and you get more and more facts and evidence, I don't see how you as a Democrat couldn't at least have an open mind to the fact that you have somebody who used his position to enrich himself and his family. I haven't heard any Democrats talk about that, you know, publicly, but you can certainly see a softening, as you said, from some of the positions right that they're taking and them trying to distance themselves from the administration on these issues.
What is the ramification of impeachment? You know, Donald Trump was impeached twice. But the last one was, I mean, I don't even think anybody noticed, for the most part, except for the mainstream media. What are the ramifications of you guys pushing this through without control of the Senate?
Yeah, here's the political reality that we currently live in. Even if we're able to pass an impeachment resolution on the House floor, it goes to the Senate and you need 60 votes. So that's why I think the way that House leadership and the Republican leadership of the different committees, there's like three different committees because there's so many crimes that are being investigated, have doing the investigation to get the evidence before the American people, to be able to convince 60 senators that this happened, here's the evidence that it happened, here's the specific crimes that were committed and the overwhelming evidence that there were crimes that were committed. And I think that will push members in the Senate to be like, look, we, regardless of party affiliation, you can't allow somebody to use their position to be bribed that is affecting national security, to be corrupted where they're getting financial benefit from being in office. So hopefully we will do a good enough job in the House laying all this evidence out before the American people and the senators, and they'll see when we preside our case, if we can get it past the House, that there were crimes that were committed and there needs to be ramifications for that crime. I mean, the Democrats impeached Trump for a phone call to a foreign leader. And in my opinion, this goes way beyond Watergate of the things that we have evidence of now.
I think this is the most dangerous corruption I have seen in an Oval Office. And, you know, I know the history of our country and Grant and everything else. And this is the most dangerous because it is not just a cover up. It's not a small crime. This is a high crime. If you are selling access to your office as vice president or president, that is a high crime. Plus, with that, you have all kinds of other things. Because he has been able to cover this up, he has the Justice Department part of this deal. Now, that goes to then all of the weaponization of government. I mean, this is huge and never ending.
Yeah, I mean, you think about, you know, why would Merrick Garland play defense in the Department of Defense, Director Wray and the FBI, by stalling and stonewalling all of these different investigations, all to protect Joe Biden and the things that have happened? I mean, some of these go back to 2014. Some of these go back to, I'm sure if you kept digging even more, probably when he was in the U.S. Senate. And as you more facts and evidence, why would Merrick Garland, Director Wray, why would these other individuals put their lives on the line? And I wholeheartedly believe that both of them are obstructing the administration of justice by not allowing the investigations to move forward the way they should be moving forward. I mean, if this was Trump or myself or any other Republican member of Congress or any conservative, I'd have been in prison a long time ago if we would have committed these crimes. And so the liability...
And I would have been for it, Greg. I mean... If you do this, I mean, I was open to listen to the case. You know, we did our own homework, and I told my my staff, I'm not looking to exonerate Donald Trump. I'm looking to find the truth, because if he did things that he wasn't supposed to, we have to stand for impeachment. The same thing. We've looked into this with Biden, and we have enough documents, I think, to impeach. We've looked into it, and it wasn't to get him out. It was, let's find out what really happened here. And you have to impeach. Otherwise, you're not asking any honest questions in life. You're just looking for something to guarantee that things continue to roll your way.
Yeah, and not just the impeachment, but just take it a step farther, the corruption of the money that was paid by our number one national security threat to the safety and security of the American people, the Chinese Communist Party, was paying him off, and he is now the president of the commander-in-chief of the military, and he's making decisions based on the compromising, corrupt behavior that he has had in the past. And why did he let a spy balloon traverse over the entire United States before they shot it down after it had collected all the intel at nuclear sites, military bases? You have a corrupt president who we now have evidence that he has received money and his family has received money from the Chinese Communist Party, and it's affecting the national security of America. So you've got
Wait a minute.
And then you've got that.
You not only have that, you also have Ukraine. He was wildly corrupt
in Ukraine.
But we're sending billions of dollars and we're talking about going to war. He's compromised. What are we 100%. Thinking? This is so dangerous. 100%. Greg, thank you. And thank you for standing up for this. Go ahead.
I would just say, and we in Congress, especially on the Republican side, have asked for information of where this money to Ukraine has gone, because there is no guardrails when the Democrats were in control of the $120 billion that we've sent to Ukraine of where that money's going and the accountability of where that taxpayer dollars have gone. And you can't tell me that that the Bidens or some other people, or there's corrupt entities that are getting money on that on the back end when they're refusing to have accountability as to where that money is being spent.
Of course, of course. I bet you 30% of it, maybe 30% of it, actually got to where it was supposed to go. Congressman Greg Stube, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime. Thank you.
You bet. Greg Stube from Florida.
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0, my annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee? Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit FearlessArmyRollCall.com to secure your spot.